Thursday night's program. Thanks for tuning in. I forgot to mention yesterday, and I feel very remiss about this, the passing yesterday of Ray Bradbury at age 91. Like most people in my generation, he was the first one who ever were exposed to, is what I'm looking for here, from the science fiction genre that read more like standard novelistic fiction. And I remember the first time I read The Martian Chronicles, I couldn't believe what I was reading. But Fahrenheit 451, of course, which is very apropos to this time, this age, thanks to the political and religious right and the horror that they've perpetrated on not just the United States, but around the globe as they get ready for their Armageddonous wars. And they are coming, of course. So anyway, a day late, a dollar short, but Ray Bradbury, the man probably most responsible for bringing science fiction into literary mainstream, was for me anyway. Getting tired of reading death notices, frankly. This is a pretty long one here, Kathy. All right, I'm going to do it anyway. This is from our sponsor this hour, Rosalie Donatelli. The message is as follows. The voices of military families are critical to ending the war in Afghanistan. As the only organization of military families in the U.S. opposing the war, military families speak out. That's MFSO. Plays a vital role in the movement to shift our nation's priorities toward a more just and sustainable future. Military families speak out is a voice to counter those who persistently ignore the true costs of war. During the most heartbreaking and stressful times of our lives, our members courageously share their stories, exposing the reality of war to the American public and our legislators. Please help us to hold our representatives accountable for their votes to prevent more death, loss of limbs, and human suffering. Our voices must be heard. It's time to end the insanity, end the war, bring our troops home, and take care of them when they get here. We need your support. Please go to our website, mfso.org. Stands for Military Families Speak Out. To find out what is happening to our troops and what is really happening in Afghanistan. See what you can do to help and become a friend of the family. mfso.org. There's a phone number here, but I'm reluctant to give it out over the air, Rosalie, because of the right-wing sons of bitches who lurk and would like to do nothing more than call you up and call you names. Go to their website, mfso.org. And thanks for the sponsorship, Rosalie. A big report today on global warming. May was so warm, May just passed. It helped shatter weather records for the lower 48 in this country, records that go back to 1895. You know, we're going to continue to get these reports as these records are shattered and the planet continues to heat up. 50 years from now, when people are gasping, well, this will be probably after the big die out. I hope your kids survive. I hope my kids survive the big die off, I should say. But even when it becomes so clear that the right-wing crazies on the Christian right and the political right can no longer ignore it, they still will be ignored. They still will be saying, no, it's Al Gore. Who? Al Gore. Who in the hell was Al Gore? You know, that sort of thing. According to data released today by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, another one of those liberal government organizations that need to be defunded, right? U.S. temperatures have been high enough to make it the warmest spring on record, the warmest year to date from January to now, and the warmest 12-month period as well in the entire history of keeping records. Chief of the Climate Monitoring Branch at the National Climate Data Center says, quote, "This warmth is an example of what to expect to see more often in a warming world. Understanding that the United States and the rest of the planet are warming, along with preparing for eventualities like this, is one way our nation can become climate smart." End quote. Now, the changes apparently were so large that the impact goes beyond the usual griping and carping about the weather. As Huffington Post puts it, how meteorological cycles work play significant roles in the macroeconomic world, in agriculture, energy consumption, and even employers' decisions on whether to hire more workers. For example, the warmer period that we are in right now has caused dislocation in the fruit growing season in the East. Now, we've seen that here in Atlanta. Normally in Atlanta, we go pick strawberries in, April? We were picking them in February. That's just one example. Some economists suggest that the milder winter months allowed employers to hire workers sooner, making recent spring unemployment numbers look soft, and that, of course, has the potential to influence elections. This year, the average spring temperature for the contiguous 48 states was 57.1 degrees, 5.2 degrees above the average from 1901 to 2000. 26 states had May temperatures ranking among their 10 warmest. Record and near-record warmth dominated the eastern two-thirds of the nation during spring. Thousands of record-breaking heat temperatures were recorded. Meanwhile, dry conditions are prevailing across the plains part of the West, and as a result, as a matter of fact, Arkansas, Missouri, Kansas, Nevada, and Utah reported May conditions among the driest in their histories. The wildfires are going to continue to burn. The temperature is going to continue to rise. And these filthy, nasty right-wingers are going to continue to say, nah, just Al Gore trying to make money. It's just, it's just so bizarre. We are going to share with you tonight the next episode, tonight and tomorrow night, during the second hour of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe, Chapter 6. So stick around for that. We love doing those. Oh, my God. The Live Science senior writer, Huffington Post, Stephanie Pappas, has a piece up about Earth Tipping Point Study in Nature Journal predicts disturbing and unpredictable changes. Oh, yeah, but we're going to worry about this little prick out in Wisconsin, right? It says here, Earth is rapidly heading toward a catastrophic breakdown if humans don't get their act together, according to an international group of scientists. Oh, see, it's those scientists again. You know, none of this is in the Bible. Everything is fine. God said he would not destroy the world again with water, I guess. Oh, wait a minute. I see. Flood. All you have to do is read your Bible if you're afraid about, a global tipping point. But I'm going to share this with you anyway when we come back, okay? Get your Bibles open. Turn to Dumbassery, Chapter 7, verses 8 through 10. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. To Huffington Post, Earth is rapidly heading toward a catastrophic breakdown if we don't get our act together. That's according to an international group of scientists writing yesterday in the journal Nature, which, you know, is just garbage. It's just garbage. It's not the Bible. It's just garbage. Writing in the journal Nature, the researchers warn that the world is headed toward a tipping point marked by extinctions and unpredictable changes on a scale not seen since the glaciers retreated 12,000 years ago. We'll see right there, 12,000 years ago. Oh, stop it. There was nothing 12,000 years. There was nothing. There was darkness. How do you think like that? How does But you know how many millions of Americans do not believe any science at all? Millions, tens of millions. Study researcher Anthony Bomoski of told Live Science, where this article appeared, quote, there's a very high possibility that by the end of the century, the Earth is going to be a very different place. He's a professor of integrative biology from the University of California, Berkeley. He joined a group of 17 other scientists to warn that this new planet that they're suggesting might not be a pleasant place to live. He says, or the report says, or he says, quote, you can envision these state changes as a fast period of adjustment where we get pushed through the eye of the needle. As we're going through the eye of the needle, that's when we see political strife, economic strife, war, and famine. End quote. Now, apparently, Barnosky and his, what they did, he and his colleagues reviewed research on climate change, ecology, and Earth's tipping points that break the camel's back, so to speak. At certain thresholds, putting more pressure on the environment tends to lead to a point of no return, according to the scientists. Suddenly, the planet responds in unpredictable ways, triggering major global transitions. The most recent example of one of those transitions is the end of the last glacial period. Within not much more than 3,000 years, the Earth went from being 30% covered in ice to its present nearly ice-free condition. Most extinctions and ecological changes occurred in just 1,600 years. And Earth's biodiversity still has not recovered to what it was. Now, I know what you're thinking. 1,600? Yeah, who gives a goddamn? Let's party! Okay. But today, Barnosky said, humans are causing changes even faster than the ones that push back the glaciers. And the changes are bigger, driven by a 35% increase in atmospheric carbon dioxide since the start of the Industrial Revolution. When was that? Mid-19th century, right? Is that right? Yeah, I think so. Global temperatures are rising faster than they did back then. Likewise, humans have completely transformed 43% of Earth's land surface for cities and agriculture, compared with the 30% land surface transition that occurred at the end of the last glacial period. A change, not that there were cities the last glacial period, but changing the surface of the Earth. And meanwhile, of course, the human population has exploded, putting more pressure on existing resources. What are we up to now? 7 billion? You know, when I was in elementary school, it was 2.5 billion. 2.5 billion. Barnowski said, quote, every change we look at that we have accomplished in the past couple of centuries is actually more than what preceded one of these major state changes in the past, end quote. Based on past transitions, Barnowski said and his colleagues predict a major loss of species. During the end of the last glacial period, half of the large-bodied mammal species in the world disappeared. They're also expecting changes in the makeup of species in various communities on the local level. Meanwhile, humans may well be knotting our own noose around our own neck as we burn through Earth's resources. Now, pulling back from the edge will require international cooperation. Woo! That's a knee slapper. International cooperation. Tell that to the Republican vermin in the House and the Senate. Tell that to the right-wing Christian nutballs. Go ahead. We need international cooperation. Oh, yeah, but the UN is going to come in with guns and take away our guns and put us all in sheep pens. Not really. We need international cooperation.
Seekers, Uncle Mikey has another bedtime story. Back to Mike Malone.
Take a long walk through a company town. On what used to be solid ground. Nobody was ever gonna get sized down. Originally.
25 before the hour. Let me share this with you again. This is from Rosalie Donatelli, who is sponsoring this hour. She is with Military Families Speak Out, MFSO. She writes, as the only organization of military families in the U.S. opposing the war, MFSO plays a vital role in the movement to shift our nation's priorities toward a more just and sustainable future. Military Families Speak Out as a voice to counter those who persistently ignore the true costs of war. During the most heartbreaking and stressful times of our lives, our members courageously share their stories, exposing the reality of war to the American public and our legislators. Please help us hold our representatives accountable for their votes to prevent more death, loss of limbs, and human suffering. Our voices must be heard. It's time to end the insanity, end the war, bring our troops home, and take care of them when they get here. We need your support. Please go to our website, mfso.org, to find out what is happening to our troops and what is really happening in Afghanistan. See what you can do to help and become a friend of the family. That's mfso.org. Yeah, please check them out. back to this scientist. You know, these scientists, they don't read their Bible. If they did, they wouldn't be talking about this crap. The report, International Group of Scientists, based apparently University of California, Berkeley, the professor there, the study researcher, one of the study researchers, Anthony Barnosky, he's a professor of integrative, however you say it, biology. Anyway, he said, under business as usual conditions, humankind will be using 50% of the land surface of the planet. By 2025, it seems unavoidable that the human population will reach 9 billion by 2050. So we'll have to become more efficient to sustain ourselves. That means more efficient energy use and energy production, a greater focus on renewable resources, and a need to save species and habitat today for future generations. He says, my bottom line is that I want the world in 50 to 100 years to be at least as good as it is now. For my children and their children, and I think most people would say the same, we are at a crossroads where if we choose to do nothing, we really do face these tipping points and a less good future for our immediate descendants. It sounds like it's right out of the Newspeak dictionary. Less good. Good, less good. No, we get what you're saying, Professor, but you're up against a mighty force of right-wing political deadheads, just totally brain dead. And right-wing Christians and right-wing Muslims and right-wing this and right-wing that, who will tell you not to worry, God will take care of it all. North Carolina legislature is preparing to ban the sea from rising. Did you hear about this? Remember the legend, the great King Canute strolling on a beach with his courtiers, and he ordered the waves to halt. Didn't work. They kept on coming. And it was a lesson intended for the monarch's fawning sycophants. King Canute was showing them that there are limits to power. Even a king can't stop the sea. Well, that doesn't apply to the North Carolina legislature. Of course not. They're getting ready to vote on a bill that would prohibit. Now, listen closely. This is the kind of insanity that Republicans are involved. I cannot understand this. Maybe you can. I say that every night, 10,000 times. I don't understand this. I can't get my mind. But here it is. The North Carolina legislature is getting ready to vote on a bill that would prohibit government agencies from preparing for the estimated 3 feet rise in coastal sea levels, which a state-appointed science panel has predicted will occur before the end of the current century. In fact, this forecast, 3 foot sea levels along the North Carolina coast, may soon be stricken from the public record. Because it takes into account the impact of global warming. And global warming isn't happening. Right? it sounds like something. Where did this come from? I got to give credit where credit's due here. I don't know. George in Oregon sent it to me, but I don't know where it's from. Is it from HuffPo? I don't know. Anyway, this sounds like something you would read in The Onion. But it's right there in the Charlotte Observer newspaper, North Carolina's leading newspaper. The headline reads, quote, coastal North Carolina counties fighting sea level rise prediction, end quote. Now, these counties have banded together, according to the Charlotte newspaper. They banded together to pressure state lawmakers to cut the bad news about the ocean from the report of the North Carolina Coastal Resources Commission. Get that out of there! This is the kind of madness. You're a scientist and you're working on a report on global expectations of what to do about it. And then you have this.
No, get that out of there.
Now, if the Republican-dominated legislature votes as expected, scientists will be prohibited. Scientists will be prohibited from factoring in the anticipated impact of climate change and the accelerating melting of the polar ice caps on North Carolina's low-lying coastal communities. By legislative decree, the state's own researchers will be forced to base their predictions solely on historical climate data rather than the acceleration of global warming that climatologists expect to occur in the coming decades.
Oh, my God.
Now, why are they doing this? Well, it's simple. Because North Carolina, where you find Cape Hatteras and roughly 2,000 square miles of low-lying coastland, North Carolina could start to lose untold millions of dollars in developer dollars if the news about rising sea levels gets out. Oh, don't tell anyone. Never mind that the news is already out. Never mind that continuing to build up this hurricane and storm surge alley is inviting disaster. Even if at the current sea levels. Never mind any of that. What's proposed is just crazy for a state that used to be a leader in marine scientists. That's according to East Carolina geologist Stan Riggs, who studies the evolution of the coast. He told the Charlotte Observer, quote, "You can't legislate the ocean. And you can't legislate storms." But apparently you can in North Carolina, which is hell-bent on burying its head in the sand as far as any of this climate change is concerned. And it's not just North Carolina. Why pick on them? They're the only ones I know, though, whose legislature is saying, no. No more talking about that nonsense. Science schmiance. Just forget about it. Develop the coast. It says in Proverbs 20:17. It says in John 19:4. It says, you know, you can look all over the Bible. There's nothing about any of this. No. Let's stop this nonsense. No. You know, if you don't admit that you have a problem, it'll just go away. Right? That's how that's handled. That's the idea in North Carolina. The Charlotte Observer reports that several local governments on the coast are not waiting for the state legislature to act. No. They've already passed their own resolutions against sea level rise policies. Meanwhile, beach erosion on the Outer Banks continues. You know, if you want the evidence that higher seas are already taking their toll. The high tides and the increase in sea level is already just eating away at the North Carolina coast. But no. Don't talk about it. Get these goddamn scientists out of here.
Wait over here. Give me, what does it say here? In Job 29:90. No, here, over here in, Matthew. No, it's Luke.
I mean, what is this? What is this? Negative spin, no messy. You got to fight them with the music. You got to fight them with the pain. You got to fight them with the phone calls. Your letters that you send. Because there's a additional cracks in your liberty bell.
Staring out at the great divide. I could go east, I could go west. It was all.
before the hour. One more time, I want to share this with you from Military Families Speak Out, Rosalie Donatelli. In her sponsorship, her message, the voices of military families are critical to ending the war in Afghanistan. And the only military family organization in the United States opposing the war is MFSO, Military Families Speak Out, which is playing a vital role in the movement to shift our priorities toward a more just and sustainable future. MFSO is a voice to counter those who persistently ignore the true costs of war. And during the most heartbreaking and stressful time of our lives, our members courageously share their stories, exposing the reality of war to the American public and our legislators. Please help us to hold our representatives accountable for their votes, to prevent more death, loss of limbs, human suffering. Our voices must be heard. It's time to end the insanity and the war, bring our troops home, and take care of them when they get here. We need your support, so please go to our website, mfso.org. MFSO for Military Families Speak Out. MFSO.org to find out what is happening to our troops and what is really happening in Afghanistan. See what you can do to help and become a friend of the family. MFSO.org. Thanks, Rosalie. The North Carolina legislature is going to say, okay, no more reports on the rising sea. No more reports on the loss of landmass because of the rising sea. No more reports on any of this stuff because, you know, it's a job killer. It'll kill jobs and property values out there on the Outer Banks. Besides, it's just a bunch of left wingers. No, you folks appointed them. Well, somehow I got confused. I wasn't supposed to say this. According to a spokesman of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, quote, as a result of the acceleration of outlet glaciers over large regions, obviously glaciers that dump into the ocean, huh? The ice sheets in Greenland and Antarctica are already contributing more and faster to sea level rise than anticipated. If this trend continues, we're likely to witness sea level rise 1 meter or more by 2100. And he cites a figure which, alarming enough, is regarded as being rather on the short side, according to some scientists. Based on the growing consensus of scientific opinion, other coastal states are now dealing more realistically with climate change in their contingency planning. Maine is preparing for a 2 meter sea level rise by 2100. Delaware anticipates 1.5 meters. Louisiana, 1 meter. California, 1.4 meters. Southeastern Florida is looking for a 2 foot rise by 2060. North Carolina, by contrast, expects to be exempt from the sea's advance and plans for only 8 inches to rise by the end of the century. Good luck, North Carolina, you goofy bastards. But when your emergency preparedness plans come up disastrously short and your insurance costs shoot through the roof and your brand new coastal developments get swept out to sea, well, you can get on the blower and call President Romney or somebody and beg for help, you stupid schmucks. What is this? How did we get so stupid? We're going to legislate away global warming and sea rise. I'll tell you what. Listen to me very, very closely. Listen to me, truth seekers. There's only one way to handle all this. Laugh at it. Just laugh at it. Out loud. You may want to work to try to add your energy to do something. To do something. No, let me take that back. No. Just laugh at it. Just laugh. I mean, what are you going to do? Until that day when enough people, if that day ever comes, and it probably won't, but one can hope. On that day when just in this country, you know, if we set the example, maybe other people will follow, because this is a global problem. That's why they call it global climate change. It's not United States climate change. It's global. But the time may come when those millions of people in the street, in a massive show of two things, solidarity and refusal to continue to work with the machine, if that great getting up morning ever does come, okay, then things might start to change. Now, I'm not going to be alive in 2100, and neither are you. But we have some kids and grandkids and creatures like that who will be. You know what I'm saying? All right, we're going to take a break and come back, and I'll try to cheer you up even more tonight. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. Gumshoe, the latest episode. I think it's episode 6. You're going to like this one. Michigan has working its way through the State House of Representatives that is controlled by Republicans, a massive 60-page omnibus bill that pretty much ends access to abortion and could end shut down all clinics across the state that may or may not perform abortion. It's being rushed through the Michigan State House of Representatives as of today. This is one of the results of the election in 2010. Remember when all of a sudden all the state houses went Republican, all the governorships went Republican? This is how it's done. And they all coordinate together to, first of all, the anti-woman legislation. Secondly, the anti-science legislation. Third, the anti-education legislation. Fourth, the anti-immigration legislation. Fifth, the anti-social safety net legislation. All of this stuff carefully coordinated by the Republican Governors Association. Well, they slowly but surely... I mean, oh,
Oh, Christ, I get tired of saying it. I'm not going to say it. Well, they slowly but surely, you know, fell in the bank. Anyway, this particular bill was introduced just last week. However, lawmakers held a hearing for it this morning. They're sending it to a full House vote. They did send it this afternoon. A spokesman for Planned Parenthood, Mid and South Michigan, said about 90 people showed up at the Health Policy Committee hearing to testify against the bill, but the committee chair, a Republican, ended the hearing, cut off all testimony, after a Michigan anti-abortion spokesperson spoke. That's it, no more! Do you understand what's going on here? I told you about North Carolina, where they're telling the scientists, oh no, don't you bring that. And in Michigan, oh no, we're only going to hear one side. You do get this, don't you? Fair and balanced. Right? Fair and balanced. Jesus God. A spokesman for Planned Parenthood, Michigan, said, quote, we had a lot of doctors there and members of the committee asking questions about what the full ramifications of a lot of these provisions could be. And quite frankly, these folks weren't allowed to answer. Specifically, this bill will criminalize all abortions after 20 weeks of pregnancy without exceptions for rape victims, the health of the woman, in cases where there may be a severe and eventually fatal fetal anomaly. It would require health centers that provide abortions to have surgery rooms even when they don't provide surgical abortions. It would require doctors to be present for medication abortions and to screen women for coercion before providing an abortion, and it would create new regulations for the disposal of fetal remains. Now, these are for the abortions prior to 20 weeks. Planned Parenthood said, quote, it will shut down most reproductive health centers in the state of Michigan. It is the most extreme legislation we've seen anywhere in the country. Now, State Representative Mike Shirky, a Republican from Clark Lake, told a local television station yesterday that he supports the bill and hopes it will end abortion in Michigan. No more. No more. Until we completely eliminate abortion in Michigan and completely defund Planned Parenthood, we have work to do. We don't care if these bitches get cancer. We don't care if these bitches get pregnant. We don't care if these bitches get breast cancer or cervical cancer. Shut up. Sit down. Get back in your home. What are you doing, bitches? What's wrong with you? Shut up. Shut up. You got no rights. You're a goddamn woman. Sit down. Shut up. Woohoo. War on women? What war on women? You can, what the hell? Molly has been taking ballet for 3 years. She just finished this year, had a recital. And it was so cute. Oh, my God. Loved it. But about 3 or 4 weeks before the recital, when Kathy and I went to pick her up after her lesson, she said, Mommy, Daddy, I'm finished with ballet. You are? Yes. Are you sure? Yes. Okay. What do you want to do? Ballet is great for stretching exercises. I'm going to take Taekwondo. You're going to take what? Taekwondo. So I can defend myself. Uh-huh. Okay. You got it. So we have been checking around. Well, I think she heard Taekwondo. I think what she meant was karate. And, you know, Kathy and I were talking that night after she went to bed. Well, There goes our little girl. Thank God. And she's going to summer camp here pretty soon. 3 or 4 weeks. I mean, real camp, sleepover camp. Goodbye, Molly. Have a nice week. She's going to do this before she turns 8. Huh? Yeah, Girl Scout camp. And one of the things she'll be learning is archery. No, she hasn't seen Hunger Games, and obviously we're not going to let her. She's too young, but it's really nice. You know, we really like the fact that she had, you know, she stuck with her ballet lessons for 3 years. It does teach balance. It does teach physical poise. It teaches an appreciation of classical music. It you know, it's really nice. She has all the basic positions down. But when she came to us and said, "That's it," and of course that's our agreement. You know, we try to open doors for Molly for whatever she wants to do. Like horseback riding, she loves. You know, lessons for that, and they're only $30. I mean, you know, it's out in the country here. And horseback riding, she really likes. The only problem I have, she's learning English. And I've spent the past 3 years teaching her Western, but she, okay, English. So horseback riding, archery, and karate. That's what I'm talking about. And I know a lot of you folks are going to go, "Oh, don't, Malloy." But within a couple of years, I'm going to teach her how to use a rifle. Absolutely.
Just don't seem to have as much to lose. Strange how the night moves.
The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
The hour. Coming out after the next break, Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe, Episode 6. How many Americans are familiar with the Charter of Rights and Freedoms? That's right, nobody. I never heard of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and neither have you. It was signed 30 years ago this past Tuesday. Now, since then, according to the Ottawa Canada Globe and Mail. Since then, not only has it become a national bedrock itself, but the Charter has replaced the American Bill of Rights as the constitutional document most emulated by other countries. How about that? Now, the Charter of Rights and Freedoms is what they have, as the article says, similar to our Bill of Rights, but also what constitutes constitution. Come on, Mike. What constitutes constitutional guarantees if you are a Canadian citizen? Two U.S. law professors whose analysis of the declining influence of the American Constitution on other nations
is going to be published by the New York University Law Review in June, had this to say, quote, could it be that Canada has surpassed or even supplanted the United States as a leading global exporter of constitutional law? The data suggests that the answer is yes. Well, then. Now, Canada, apparently, I didn't know any of this, was the first Commonwealth nation to adopt a Bill of Rights and has influenced other former British colonies as they create or revise their own constitution, according to the study. Israel, Hong Kong, and Eastern European countries have also drawn from the Canadian example. Now, it's being said that both the Charter of Rights and Freedoms and the nation that gave birth to it, Canada, are beginning to serve as an example to the world that the United States used to serve. See, the world is getting hip to us. Ah, the world's getting hip to us. They understand that our Bill of Rights doesn't mean a goddamn thing anymore. And hasn't for about 30 years. But especially now, it doesn't mean anything. We've talked about this on this program, haven't we, Truth Seekers? It means nothing. Now, David Law, that's his name, was a professor of law at Washington University in St. Louis. And another professor who teaches law at University of Virginia said, quote, some countries may be especially prone to borrow from the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms because they perceive themselves as sharing the same goals and values as Canadian society, end quote. Whoops. Really? Where were we? When this happened? Where were we? Huh? We've been talking about this. You know where we were. We had our head up our asses. That's where we were. And we have allowed the U.S. constitutional guarantees, not just the Bill of Rights, but a whole bunch of them, to become meaningless. What did George Bush say? It's a goddamn piece of paper. And the rest of the world is noticing. You know, it is not Canada that sends drones to murder people. It is not Canada that has torture centers around the planet. The professors conclude that the American Constitution, once the foundational document for new nations in search of government, has fallen out of favor. Why? Well, it fails to protect human rights, such as freedom from discrimination based on race or sex. It enshrines rights such as the right to bear arms that other nations don't value. The courts in this country increasingly interpret the American document so perversely, for example, by claiming that it must only be applied as the founding fathers originally intended, so as to render it useless as a tool for tackling modern problems. The rest of the world, Mr. and Miss America, are getting hip to us. They know what we're doing. They know what we're doing. They know the political right and these religious crazy sons of bitches are destroying it all. They know that. Thank God, so to speak, for Canada. Beyond the Charter itself, the Canadian Supreme Court is considered an exemplar in balancing constitutional and legislative powers, a role the American Supreme Court lost entirely because it's been turned into an ideological battleground, with the right-wingers winning repeatedly. So there you go. All right, now here's your assignment, you Americans. Do a Google on the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. They just signed 30 years ago. The Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And read it. When we come back, Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe. Yes, I am.
Live in a country that's safe, in a land that's clean and free. for every color and culture, every person, every belief.
I don't know if you're ready for this, but here we go. Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe, written and produced by Bob Alexander, episode 6.
From Hollywood, the Jimmy Durante Show.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Now have you heard the news?
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
Beyond the barriers of space and time, through a million would-be years on 1,000 maybe worlds. Yes, radio listeners, it's time once again to join truth seekers from around the globe who anxiously await the return of Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe.
You remember last time Mike and Kathy convinced Hal to stop the Tesla time-o-matic before the AE-35 unit failed with disastrous consequences. Once outside the time-traveling pod, they encounter a little girl, Molly, who has mysteriously arrived with Mike and Kathy's dog, Asta. Confused? Join the club and join us now for tonight's thrilling episode, Chapter 6, The Menacing Mist.
Well, Molly, didn't your mommy and daddy tell you you shouldn't talk to strangers?
You're silly. You're not strangers. You moved into the house next door right after school started. Come on, we have to go. You told me this morning you had to be at Mr. Moody's before 3 o'clock.
One last question, sweetie. What year is it?
You told me you'd ask me that. It's 1959, of course.
Molly, why don't you run on up ahead with Asta?
Okay.
Mike, how did he get here?
Well, as weird as it sounds, we must have traveled back here to... When did Molly say?
She said we moved next door to her after school started.
Yeah, right. But for some reason, we came back here about 10 months ago. And then this morning, gave Asta to Molly and told her to meet us here, wherever here is.
I know, but where did Asta come from?
She gave him to us just now.
But where did she get him?
We gave him to her this morning.
Right. But where did he come from?
And
if you tell me she gave him to us one more time, I'll...
There wasn't an unraveling time travel paradoxes chapter in my gumshoe training manual.
Will you guys hurry up?
We better stop all this self-referencing stuff and get on with advancing the plot.
Well, it was either that or I'd have to do a voiceover narration describing tramping through the woods, walking up to the edge of town, and... But here we are.
Mr. Moody, Mr. Moody, here they are.
Well, here you all are, right on time.
You were expecting us?
Yeah, and I've got pert near what you need. Come along into my office in the back.
We've been walking quite a ways. Is it possible we could buy some bottled water?
Bottled water? You mean some fellas figured out you could fill up a bottle from any old tap and charge folks for it?
Well, if we could just have a glass of water?
Well, I don't think that's a very good idea, Ms. Malloy. Best if you just get a soda from the machine over there.
I guess fizzy sugar water will have to do.
Hiya, considering the alternative, but I'm getting ahead of myself here. First things first, I finally got the parts in yesterday and got her all fixed up as good as new.
What's that?
Why, this is your new AE-35 unit.
How did you know?
It wasn't that hard. Most of the parts I ordered from my Heathkit catalog. Some of those transistors are a bit dear. Most people around here never even heard of them.
But you fixed the AE-35 unit? I don't even know what it does.
And you don't need to know either. You just need to get out of here. Before it's too late.
What's going on?
Well, I told you once, and it looks like I'll have to tell it to you again. Come over here by the window. Now, what do you see?
Well, it looks like any other small town.
I am, in most ways. Now, you came from way down over there. We call that part the zone. And now over there live the Cleavers. Ward and June and their two boys. And over a couple blocks this way are the Andersons. Jim and Margaret, Betty, Bud, and Kathy. Are you starting to get the picture? Now, If you keep walking toward the center of town, you'll pass by the Nelson's house.
Ozzie. I get it. Ozzie, Harriet, David, and...
Ricky? Oh, Mike, where are we?
Springfield. It's a great place to raise your kids up, or it used to be.
What kind of place is this?
Just your typical American town. You should know it pretty well by now. You've been watching it on your TV sets for over 50 years.
But I don't understand.
All those old shows were made in Hollywood.
Who says? How do you know that for a fact? Why don't you grab another Moxie from the machine, and I'll tell you all you need to know, so you'll grab this thingamabob.
AE-35 unit.
Whatever. Grab this AE-35 unit, that little girl, and your little dog.
What's going to happen?
Well, it all started when that fool Ozzie Nelson decided he'd quit the band business and move out here. Next thing you know, he started fooling around and took a bunch of home movies. Typical stuff of the wife and kids. And then he had an idea. Why not make his home movies into a TV show starring his wife and the kids? Everybody from around here thought he was crazy until all those film trucks showed up from California. And the next thing you know, The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet was on the TV. Well, when the money started pouring in, the town went nuts. Suddenly, Jim Anderson decided his family could be on the TV, too. And, of course, Ward Cleaver, he wanted a slice of the pie, too.
Oh, my God. Leave it to Beaver.
I thought there was something not quite right about that boy.
But how did that affect the whole town?
Springfield wasn't a town anymore. It was an industry. Everybody worked on the shows. Everybody. And for a while, it looked like Springfield was an even better place to live until...
What happened?
Well, people started to crack up. Nobody can live like that for any length of time at all.
Tell me about it.
Why, I almost forgot you were here.
I didn't have any lines till now. Anyway, it's true what he says. This place has become really creepy.
I guess you have to call it stress or something. Everybody's always acting like everything's just fine and dandy because you never know if you're being filmed or not. And the things we were supposed to laugh at. Beaver gets stuck up on a billboard sign and the whole town's supposed to crack up. Like, that's the funniest, cutest thing we ever did see. Well, after a while, people just couldn't take it anymore. They started lining up in droves to see the town psychiatrist.
That's my daddy.
What does a psychiatrist have to do with...
Instead of giving everybody a prescription for
barbiturates.
Whatever. Instead of giving everybody a prescription, my daddy said it would be a lot cheaper if we just dumped it all in the water tower.
After a couple of days of living in Springfield and drinking the water, you'll fit right in. You might even start to like Ricky Nelson's music. God help you.
This is one big reality show. We've got to get out of here.
Who runs this town?
Well, who do you want to know about first? The Republicans or the aliens?
Portrait of an American family on the eve of invasion from outer space. Of course, we know it's merely fiction. And yet, think twice when you drink your next glass of water. Find out if it's from your local reservoir or possibly it came direct to you from the Twilight Zone.
Holy cow, we're only on the sixth episode, and already the writer has thrown in everything and the kitchen sink. How convoluted are things going to get? Here's a scene from our next thrill-packed, hair-curling, ear-popping episode.
Although when I mentioned that the poison would kill me within the hour, did either of you happen to notice the time?
For more heart-pounding excitement, be sure to tune in next time for the return of Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe.
I love it. Mike Malloy Radio and Gumshoe, written and produced by Bob Alexander up in the wilds of Vancouver, British Columbia, where it's safe, as performed by the Mighty Malloy Radio Players. That that is a lot of fun to do that. It's a real challenge for Bob. All we have to do is read his scripts. That was I like that. That was a good one. That was a good one. Bob Alexander, radio script writing genius, responsible for the return of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe. So if you're thinking about suing us, talk with him. Oh my God, I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Can't wait for the next one. Okay, back to, we're going to play this again tomorrow night. Same time, same station, as they say. And right now, we're going to open up all the phone lines. And hopefully you will be inclined to call in and comment on some of the events of the day. The number here is 877-996-2556. 877-996-2556. I don't know if you saw this on television the other night. Of course, this is impossible because it's not in the Bible. And, you know, the earth and everything was created only 6,000 years ago. But this comes from Oskaloosa, Iowa. Did you hear about this family? They discovered mammoth bones, capital M, not mammoth as in big, but mammoth, the creature bones in their backyard. the first bones were discovered in July 2010. By a man and his two teenage sons when they were walking through the woods on this family's property looking for blackberries. And one of the guy's sons pointed out what he thought was a ball in the creek. When they got closer, the man, who has an interest in archaeology, noticed a marrow line at the top of the ball. So, realizing there's no ball, the family dug out what has now been identified as a mammoth femur bone, leg bone. They have been estimated at 12,000 years old. And one scientist says they're going to, you know, they're going to carbon date this, but the bones discovered could be 100,000 years old or more. Now, we know this is fake, right? Because any Christian would tell you everything started about 6,000 years ago. These mammoth bones that were discovered in this family's backyard in the creek out and back, they have been so far taken to the University of Iowa. According to the video I saw, there are now scientists from the archaeology department, University of Iowa, who are out there digging them up the proper way, all these different bones. The University of Iowa's Museum of Natural History is overseeing the excavation and research. Education coordinator at the museum said, quote, the size of this discovery is quite uncommon. It's pretty exciting, partially because a mammoth is being discovered where it died. And we know that because we're finding very large bones right alongside very small bones, end quote. And Ms. Horgan, the educational coordinator at the museum, said the mammoth is at least 12,000 years old and was extinct by the end of the last ice age, which we were talking about earlier. She also noted that the mammoth's discovery is not uncommon in Iowa, and that her museum has a working record of reported fossil discoveries around the state. She said, quote, the bones discovered could be 100,000 years old or more, end quote. Isn't that amazing? And if you saw the video that a couple of broadcast news outlets provided, these things are huge. Well, they're mammoth. They didn't call them mammoth because they were small. But how do the Christian fundamentalists deal with this? I mean, how do they deal? Well, they don't. They just reject the whole goddamn thing, all of it. Global climate change,
Bones identified as being 12,000 to 100,000 years old. As far as the age of the universe or the age of the solar system, nonsense. None of it's real. All this science stuff is crapola. It's garbage. They're starting to teach that it's crapola in the public schools. How many of these states now insist on teaching creationism alongside evolution so that, you know, the children can expand their consciousness and have something to compare? You know, we have to let the little tykes understand that the theory of evolution and the so-called theory of creationism are just two opposing ideas. And of course, if you believe in one, you're going to go to heaven. If you believe in the other, your soul is condemned to everlasting pain and fire. Which one do you want, little fourth graders? Do you want heaven, where you'll get to see your mommy and daddy after they die? Or do you want hell? Now, you believe this evolution stuff, and you are going to burn forever. Have you ever burned your finger? Isn't that awful? Imagine flames licking at your body through all eternity. Now, tell me again, which do you want to believe? The Bible? Or these scientists? The Bible. Good choice. It's really pretty scary. It's really pretty scary. Gordon is in rural Alberta, Canada. Hello, Gordon.
Oh, hey, Mike.
How are you?
I'm fabulous out here on the prairie.
You live on the prairie?
Well, I don't live here necessarily. I drive around a lot.
I see.
About the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms.
Yeah. Is it? Did I get it wrong?
I don't think you got it wrong. There's just a couple of things you need to know about it.
Okay.
As opposed to the U.S. Constitution, there is no specific protection for the separation of church and state. In my home province of Ontario, in fact, there are two separately funded education systems, one for everyone else and one for Catholics.
That's true in the States, too. They're not publicly funded, not overtly, but we've always had a Catholic school system here.
Yeah, but, I mean, you guys fund it privately. It comes out of the Ontario taxpayers' pocket.
Oh, I see.
Right? So, I mean, my money is going towards an organization which protects pedophiles and has a history of, conquest and destruction and BS. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I know what you're saying, Gordon.
And also within the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, there's no specific right to bear arms. In Canada, it's considered a privilege.
No, well, I like that part.
I suppose so, too. When I went and got my PAL, my possession and acquisition license, there's a pretty rigorous background check that goes with it. And then when you've finally done all the tests and you've proved that you know what the hell you're doing, when the government receives your application, they sit on it for 28 days before they even process it. So it might actually take you 3 months to get your gun license.
Excellent idea, as far as I'm concerned.
Me too. It removes the idiots and the crimes of passion and whatnot, right? So
it does. It does indeed. So the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Let me just ask you point blank. Do you, so to speak, do you think it is a document that exceeds the guarantees supposedly granted to citizens of the United States? I shouldn't say exceeds, but it's more respectful of those rights. You see what has happened in this country, in our country, in the United States, those rights are being destroyed. The freedom of assembly, the right to protest.
That's not a function of the Constitution so much as it's a function of the money that's taken over your government, much as it's going to be here, too, right? Because when Harper was got his first majority government last year, after several minority governments, his first action was to eliminate the public taxpayer
Hey, Gordon, I've got a break here, so I'm going to put you on hold. If you can stick around, I'd love that, so you can finish what you're saying. If you can't stick around, I understand, but try to stay there. We'll pick you up right after the break. Driving in rural Alberta, Canada, listening to Sirius. All right, Gordon, now we're talking about the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and you were telling me that Harper is doing his damnedest to undermine all that? Is that the gist of what you were saying?
Well, what I was getting at is that it's not the application of those documents or the difference between the Charter and the U.S. Constitution is the problem. It's the money getting into politics.
Mm-hmm.
And when Harper achieved his first majority, which with only 39% of the vote, by the way, but that's a separate argument.
Right.
But the first thing he did when he came into power was killed the per vote election subsidy. So basically, Canadian elections only last for 30 days, and all the financing for them either comes from private donations or the government. The government would give a per vote subsidy of $1.75 per vote of what you achieved in the previous election.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, Harper's saying, we're phasing this out, and we're going to go back to having corporate donations. And him and the Conservatives are always like, well, you know, we're going to have caps, and it's, you know, they allude to some bogus promise that mm-hmm. they're not going to devolve to your system where you've got millions and billions flowing into election campaigns. I mean, it's a pretty empty promise.
Well, what can Canadians do to stop? I mean, you've got a perfect example of the poison and the filth and the dirt that corporate money injects into the political system. We don't have a political system here anymore that's run by the people. Ours is totally gone, completely gone.
Well, it's been hijacked. I was monitoring the whole Wisconsin thing. Like, I'm a political junkie, and I've been listening to you and a few other programs for years, and I do quite a bit of reading on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. And, I mean, that's what we're facing. If he doesn't lose in the next election, which is 3 or 4 years away, could be, you know, we're screwed because he's going to be there. The Conservatives are going to bring this in. And then not too far after that, you're going to start seeing like the big oil companies like Encana and Suncor and Syncrude and all his buddies, because Harper is a Calgary guy. And, you know, mm-hmm. he used to be the head of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. And I mean, all them guys are funded by oil money, you know?
Well, so, why is Harper, you have a parliamentary system, right?
We do.
Well, why has Harper got 3 or 4 years left? Doesn't it take just one a vote of no confidence to?
Well, yeah, that's if there is one, though. But the problem is when you establish a clear majority, those votes of no confidence become rare. And we've had like 4 or 5 elections in the last few years, and that's because he only had a minority, and we've got like a bunch of different political parties, so the parliament was fractured, so it was easier to pull off a vote of non-confidence. But once you've got a majority, that likelihood decreases significantly.
Well, did you not say that his majority, though, he won with 39%?
That was how many people voted for him. But this is the problem with the first-past-the-post election system, which we are also under, much like the U.S., is he won 39% of the vote, but the way the ridings are all drawn out, and like a riding would be the same as a district in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And so he took a majority of ridings with a minority of the vote.
I mean, there's a
movement in Canada to get rid of the first-past-the-post system, but every time there's a referendum on it at the provincial level, it gets voted down because the government simply will not explain it well to people, and they won't allow for discussion of it in the media very well, so a lot of people have no idea what it is.
Mm-hmm.
They vote it down, we get left with first-past-the-post, and we have to deal with idiots like Harper.
Let me ask, as long as I've got you on the phone and you seem very, very tuned in to your political system, probably much more so than the average American is tuned into his or her political system, but I have not given any coverage yet because I'm not quite sure how to do this, of what started as a student strike in Quebec. And I guess in Montreal, where it was a matter of tuition going up, but it's my understanding, even though it doesn't get a lot of coverage in the American media, that this strike now, or these demonstrations by Canadian students has been going on for a couple of months.
Yeah, they have.
And people are being arrested.
Yes, well, what's happened is it's gone beyond the hike in tuition fees, right?
Right.
Like, that's how it started. But what happened was because these protests have been going on nonstop and there's been so many people in the streets, the provincial government in Quebec under a leader named Jean Charest basically introduced this emergency legislation called Bill 78. And essentially, they declared that any gathering in excess of 10 people had to ask permission from the government to be legal. So they basically suspended the right of peaceful assembly, like that. Like, just by executive fiat, that's it. No more peaceful assembly. F you.
What are the people in that particular province doing? Is it limited to Quebec, or has it spread to other provinces now?
Well, there's been some smaller, there's been some smaller demonstrations outside of Quebec to express solidarity with what is now being referred to as Lay's Casserole, is what they're calling the protest action now.
Mm-hmm.
After banging pots and pans in the street, and there's been solidarity rallies, but not very much, you know. Mm-hmm.
That banging was an Irish. Didn't that come from the resistance to the British occupation in Northern Ireland,
I've heard that, but I've also heard it that it started in South America, in Chile, actually.
Well, that's right. Originally, it was
a protest of the middle and upper classes because they were protesting against the Allende government, which was overthrown by you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then now it's been adapted by everybody else.
So what is your best guess as to what's going to happen in two quick questions here? What's your best guess as to what's going to happen in Quebec? A. B. How serious is this suspension of the right of peaceful assembly, if you all have that right, and I'm sure you do? How serious is this, and how much longer are the Canadian people going to put up with it, or at least the Quebecois going to put up with it?
Yeah, well, as I said, it's a law that was enacted in the province of Quebec, so it only applies there. But, I mean, it's being outright defied. I mean, the protests are continuing, and, I mean, there's a major demonstration underway as we speak in Montreal right now.
Hmm.
It's continuing. And there's been hundreds of thousands of people in the streets. And the Charest government, I have no idea what they're going to do, man. I really don't. I'm not as dialed into Quebec politics as other people because I'm an Anglophone and my French
right.
is very limited.
Right.
So, you know, but I do have friends that are students. I do have friends in resistance movements across the country, and I pick up information from them via Facebook and phone conversations and whatnot. So,
you know, I remember back in the, I believe it was the 60s, the Quebec separatist movement, and how violent that became, especially with the exploding mailboxes.
Well, yeah, that was the FLQ, the Front de Libération de Québec.
Right.
They didn't keep a lid on the violence, and what ended up happening there was a sect within them took a British diplomat hostage and a Quebec French politician hostage. And one of them was killed, like was found in the trunk of a car, murdered. So Pierre Trudeau basically like put the whole country on lockdown, and they got these guys, and that was the end of that.
Well, listen, Gordon, I hope you call again. We do not pay enough attention on this program to what is going on across the border. And Canada, being the largest trading partner with the United States, the largest common border of any two countries on earth, and now being negatively influenced by some of these corporate pigs and thugs in the United States, I do hope that you'll stay in touch and occasionally call in.
Can I say two more things before I go?
Yeah, very quickly. We have 10 seconds.
Okay. Don't look to us. As long as we have the conservatives in power and oil money flowing through Western Canada and a lot of people being sympathetic to the Harper government, we're kind of going towards your guys' way of doing things.
Oh, God.
And you know what? Like, don't ever take any Canadian snobbery wrong. We understand what you guys are facing, and we know Americans are just like any other people on Earth. You're just dealing with retard rulers.
I hear that. Gordon, thank you. It was a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, take it easy, sir.
All right, sir, you too.
They're not
we'll
even
be right
real
back.
Country anyway.
My son could have been a doctor or a lawyer, rich and true. Instead, he burned up like a piggy on a barbecue.
Should we blame the matches? Should we blame the fire? Or the doctors who allowed it to expire?
Heck no! Blame Canada! Blame Canada!
Sure,
Canada!
The hour. Back to your calls. Gary is calling from Minneapolis, listening on KTNF. Hey, Gary.
How you doing?
I'm pretty good. How about you?
Not too bad. I wanted to comment on that Canadian thing. Harper used to be what's known as the Trudeau Liberal, and Trudeau was the one that when that thing went down in Quebec.
Uh-huh.
They actually had, I think they brought the tanks in, and they had this old archaic law called the War Powers Act.
Mm.
So that was, and they basically kind of crushed dissent back then. So
I
wanted
see.
To add that in.
Okay.
And a couple things I wanted to call about was, I'm sure you probably heard that Herman Cain's coming to WSD.
Well, it's a joke here in Atlanta among people who can still think. Neil Bortz announced to the world, as if the world gave a goddamn, that he's going to retire. Of course, he's not going to retire until the first of next year. But he wants the 6 month long, slobbering all over him about what a great man he is. Well, one thing about Bortz, and I worked with him for 3 years. I know this guy. He is one of the most insecure, weak-kneed crybabies I have ever met. I came on after him. That's the way the schedule was set up at WSB years ago. And I used to show up at the studio, and the executive producer, the program director, said, Malloy, I want you to go in, the last, 10 minutes of Bortz's program and sit down and you two guys banter about something. He'll take the right, you take the left, and, just a little conversation. Then you get up and leave, kind of tease your program. I said, okay. So I started doing that, and I found out very quickly that Neil Bortz was just a little wimp. If I walked into the studio and said, hey, Neil, I was driving over here and I heard you say blah, 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 you're out of your mind. That's what, he would just get so pissed off and so offended. He finally went to the boss and said, I don't want Mike Malloy coming in here. He is a very thin skinned, insecure, sorry little weasel who sits behind his microphone and beats the hell out of everybody. He just thinks, on the other hand, that he's this king of the hill. But if you challenge him just the slightest, he falls apart and starts whining and running for the nearest management so he can report you. He also hates black people.
The fact that you know, he's all kissy face and buddy buddy and assy grabby with Herman Cain is an absolute joke. I'm sure after Neil hugs Herman Cain, as you've seen on TV lately, I don't know, maybe you haven't seen it up there, but we damn sure have seen it here. Neil runs down the hall and washes his hands. He's not going to get that close to a Negro. Are you kidding me? So this whole thing with Bortz and Herman Cain is like a shotgun marriage. WSB has gone so far to the right, they would put Attila the Hun on. Because there's nobody as asinine locally here as Neil, except Herman Cain. Now, I have to say that Neil does have some intelligence, or not intelligence, but some knowledge that he's picked up from 40 years in radio. Herman Cain is a total jackass. He couldn't find his ass with both hands, Herman Cain Gooden. So he's going to be, now he did have a part-time gig at WSB before he decided he was going to be president. But to watch Neil hugging on this adulterous little prick and acting like, you know, oh, I can't wait for Herman to come in here and take my position is such a joke, because Neil is a racist down to the bottoms of his white feet.
Yep.
I hope I didn't overstate anything.
Nope. And the one quick thing I wanted to mention, when I was on a few weeks ago, Sanchez came on after me and he mentioned that he had the flyer in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Right.
So what I was thinking is, I was hoping if next time you have Brad Freeman on, can he come and play some FCC non-offensive punk rock as the bumper music? I think that would be really cool as an honor.
I'll pass it on to Brad. Brad's going to be filling in for me next week anyway, so I'll ask him, okay?
I'm sure Sanchez has got the music because he's a DJ, and I always like that era of music. If you could play some Black Flag or the Dills doing Class War, that would be great.
I hear you. All right, Gary. Thanks a lot. You ought to call Janet Roberts, who owns the station you're listening to tonight, and ask her to play some.
Okay. I'll try to do that.
Thanks, Gary. Appreciate you checking in.
Talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you. I wonder if Janet, what do you think, Kathy? You think Janet Roberts has any punk rock music in the in the library at KTNF? I would probably doubt it. But you never know about Janet. You never know. She just might fool you. She has certainly fooled us a couple of times. Bless her heart. We love our station managers, especially Janet Roberts. I'll tell you right now. We'll be back after the break. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Peace with guns. Number here is 877-996-2556. We do have an open line if you want to join in. Kevin is in Colorado Springs. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, good evening, Mike.
How are you?
Hey, good.
Good.
Doing good. How are you doing?
Fair to partly cloudy.
Yeah, I know the feeling. Hey, the other night you read that open letter that I dad wrote to the DNC.
Uh-huh.
Let me tell you, I got so much, for lack of a better word, criticism over that. people were telling me I shouldn't have done that, that it was bashing the president, and it's wrong to do that. I should just be quiet and, you know, stay on the team, so to speak. And I just thought how sad it is that people think that, that you can't criticize someone or something. I'm not a Robitaille like somebody in the Republican Party, and I damn sure am not going to sit back and not criticize the president when I feel that there's something there that needs to be said.
No, sure. But there is an awful lot of fear in the ranks of the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party understands that it has abandoned totally progressives and liberals, and progressives and liberals are starting to get that through their sometimes thick heads, that they do not have any longer a party to which they can make contributions and from which they can expect liberal or progressive leadership. So what you have is a huge number, millions of rank and file Democrats out here right now who are petrified. They have no leader. The leaders that they do have are throwing them under the bus, just like the Republican Party has done to their rank and file. The difference is that the Republican rank and file are so goddamn brain dead to begin with that they don't even know they've been thrown under the bus. Yeah. Whereas a lot of Democrats are starting to figure it out. So, if anyone raises his or her head above the crowd right now and of Democrats and criticizes what this president is doing, You're going to hear a lot of criticism. Oh, don't do that. What about the Supreme Court? You know, I get emails from people who tried to tell me that this little radio program, if I or my listeners express an anti-Obama policy sentiment, which is all I've ever done, I don't think he's a schmuck. I think he's probably a nice guy. But his policies, that if I do that, that somehow this little talk radio program is going to have an influence on the upcoming presidential election. And, you know, I laugh my ass off when I get that because I think to myself, you know, would that that were true. But, you know, I'm no great leader like, say, Sean Hannity. So, you know, the whole thing is kind of a farce when people say that if you criticize this man's policies, that somehow you are undermining his presidency. That's goose stepping to me. That's cowardice of the highest order. So I don't know. I don't know what to tell you, Kevin, except, you know, don't stop with your criticism. You're certainly entitled to it. If somebody doesn't like it, they can, you know, kiss your butt.
You know, I was at a meeting last night and somebody asked me, well, what do you expect out of the leaders of the Democratic Party? And I said, I want a leader that will speak up and speak out and won't play the stupid little game and do the things that have been done by the DNC and the president, for that matter, to betray us. And that's what I want someone to take up the cause of the 99% of the Democratic Party and speak out and not hold back, because that's why where we're at today is because we've been abandoned.
Right. Well, we you know, I go back to what I've been saying here, Kevin, lately, when I finally realized, after years of being told this and not wanting to believe it, and then finally, you know, waking up and smelling the coffee, as Ann Landers used to say, and that is that the Democratic Party, with one or two exceptions, and they're getting fewer and fewer, the Democratic Party is another wholly owned subsidiary of capitalist America, corporate America. And it's not going, we cannot. I mean, it's an impossibility, not because I say so, but because the way the system works. It's impossible to get to pry the Democratic Party out of the hands of corporate America for a very simple reason. Corporate America provides the money to the Democratic Party to get elected and reelected. So the Democratic Party is never, ever, under any circumstances, any way, shape, or form, going to even attempt to enact legislation that would have a negative effect so to speak, on these corporate sons of bitches. So the system is gone. I mean, there is still this kind of after image, like when you stare at something red and count to 100 and then look at a blank wall, you're going to see green. There's kind of an after image of the Democratic Party, but it doesn't exist anymore to the extent where traditional Democrats have anything to say. And that's been true of the Republican Party for 20 years, 25 years. So the system, our political system, has been utterly and absolutely destroyed, even though we still see the afterimage. We still see, oh, there's two parties. Oh, well, those are Democrats. Oh, well, those are Republicans. Gee, who am I going to vote for this time? It's nonsense. And the only way to change it is to stop participating in the system. That's all. There's no other way.
You said it.
All right. Kevin, thanks. I appreciate what you had to say. Thanks for checking in. This is not hard to understand. It's hard to process. It's hard to get it into your head. Like I say, you know, my own personal struggle has been just struggling with that very idea. No, I can't believe that. I've got to believe that this Democrat I vote for, whether it's local, state, or national, or the presidential election, this Democrat I vote for is going to turn things around. This Democrat is going to form a coalition with other kinds of Democrats, in the House, in the Senate, wherever. And they're going to recapture the Democratic Party. We're going to beat the sons of bitches. We really are. The Democrats are going to rise up. They're going to smash this move to fascism. No, they're not. In fact, they're assisting in the move to fascism. Now, as Brother Dave Gardner used to say, that's a hard saying. That's hard to get your mind around that. Remember, it isn't the pendulum swinging to and fro, but the essence that drives it that makes us go. That's another hard saying. There are those of us who are bound in the round who have a tendency to put down those who are bound in the square. But it's neither the round or the square, but the spiral that leads to the hot top of the heap. Brother Dave Gardner said that back in the 50s. Who's Brother Dave Gardner? I know. It's okay. The system is totally owned and operated by the capitalists. Totally. All the way down to your state court judges, your state Supreme Court judges, your county commissioners. Now, there's a very clear choice. Continue to delude yourself that voting for this Democrat or that Democrat, or, oh, I know, voting for a Green candidate, that somehow that's going to work. And the politics fairy will jump up out of the weeds and sprinkle America with political fairy dust. And you'll wake up after the next election and, oh, my goodness, everything has been restored. You can do that if you want to. Or you can consider what Mario Savio said almost 50 years ago. And realize that the operation of the machine has become so odious, so vile, so counter to everything that we were taught this country's about, that you have got to make it stop. And you cannot make the machine stop by continuing to participate in its operation. Come on. There are only two choices here. Either continue the delusion or don't. I mean, this is not hard stuff to come to terms with. Is it hard to follow through? Yes. How do you get 30 million people in the street? How do you get people to say enough? Well, for the most part, you don't. before the hour. Let me see, where are we? Jim is in Las Vegas listening on Sirius. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Mike. Another great show, man. You're incredible, but...
well, thanks.
No, I just, you know, just the beginning of the show was fantastic and just everything else, but you kind of remind me... that New Orleans district attorney, Jim Garrison, you know?
Yeah, I remember him, yeah. Yeah.
Just didn't give up the fight. And, I really appreciate it.
Well, I'm glad you feel that way. It's very complimentary, for you to say that, and I appreciate that. I guess, you know, if you've been listening to the program for any period of time, we just, you know, gather around this, so-called electronic campfire every night and assess what's going on. And, of late, that would be for the past, 25 years or so, it's all pretty grim. So,
no, I know. I mean, I've seen it myself, you know, I mean, I felt like when Obama got elected, there was a little bit of hope, but then the pragmatic, the realistic side of me was thinking, well, maybe, but then you don't know what's stacked against him. You don't know what his ulterior motives are.
Right.
You know, it's just like, well, if Republicans, at least you know what they're going to do. They're going to screw you over.
Right. That's true. That's very true.
I just wanted to pass that on to you and keep doing what you do, man. I really appreciate it.
All right. Well, Jim, thank you very much. Those are kind words, and thanks a lot for checking in. Take care. Mark is in Seattle. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Mike. It's Mark Taylor Canfield.
Yes, sir.
I'm in Seattle. And I'm also a journalist. I want to let everyone know that my job is to afflict the comfortable and to
comfort the afflicted. Where can people read? I'm assuming when you say journalist, you write.
Yeah, I'm a contributing writer for the Huffington Post.
Oh, that's right.
Stuff about the Occupy Wall Street movement.
Okay.
I'm also a reporter for Free Speech Radio News on the Pacifica Radio Network.
Oh, great. Okay.
But, you know, I wanted to thank you for the fact that at least there's one place where there's a forum for some truth-telling, because this weekend we had the Washington State Democratic Party Convention here in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found as somebody, you know, trying to work with them is that their only real interest is electing Barack Obama and putting him back in the White House. And mm-hmm. the truth is that although the grassroots, because I actually addressed the progressive caucus of the Democratic Party in Washington State, and they were all for the Occupy Wall Street movement and gave me great applause, you know, for everything I had to say. But the leadership itself, unfortunately, is beholden to Wall Street money. And
sure.
We know that Obama's top contributors are, you know, the employees for Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan Chase. So although it was a disappointing experience for an idealist like myself, it was a good lesson in realpolitik in terms of, like, what we're really up against mm-hmm. the Democratic Party. Because, like I said, the grassroots is all for these reforms and especially the corruption on Wall Street and the corruption in our election system and our government. But the leadership itself is not really willing to let the grassroots run the agenda. You know,
So pointing that out about the Washington Democratic Party, I know it's true with the California Democratic Party. It's probably true with every state Democratic Party. There are still people who would identify themselves as liberals or progressives or a combination of both, and they have zero voice, and they will continue to have zero voice. It doesn't make any difference how righteous their cause might be. These folks will never be heard. It's just simply not going to happen. So what is the alternative? As far as I can see, there are two choices. Continue the charade. Continue Democrats or progressive, or say progressives and liberals, continue to tell themselves the lie that the Democratic Party is the vehicle in which they're going to advance their agenda. It's not going to happen. The Democratic Party, much like the Republican Party, the Republican Party is a total zombie. The Democratic Party is fast becoming that. So what do? You can't form another party. The system is so set up that it's impossible, even if you do set up another party in somebody's basement and you have 100, dedicated volunteers, it's not going to happen. You're not going to get on state ballots with because of the way the system is skewed strictly for the two-party system. The corporatists knew what they were doing when all these laws were passed to make it almost impossible for third, fourth, fifth, sixth parties to get into the game. So the only way, as far as I can see, and I'm open for somebody telling me, no, that's not the only way. I'd love to hear it. The only way, as far as I can see, is to stop participating in this system. And once the power understands that the jig is up, the game is over, people are not going to do it anymore. Only then will there ever be the kind of reform that we need. And the reform is not going to come from the top. And it's not going to come from the Democrats. And it's not going to come from the Progressive Caucus. It's simply not going to happen until there are millions of people who bring the machine to a stop. And Mark, I'm sorry. Well, we're flat out of time. I got a boogie. And I cannot understand why that seems like a radical idea. It's not a radical idea. Oy. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Stay tuned.